Hello and welcome to Shame Spiral. I'm Ellie Kremendahl, a psychotherapist turned comedian, and this is the podcast where I low-key exploit my therapy background to interview guests about all things shame. I was so excited to spiral out this week with River Butcher. River is so funny, so amazing, so prolific. He is a comedian, a writer, an actor, a podcaster. He has a podcast that I love so much. It's called The New Guys, K-N-E-W, a little double entendre, if you will. River has performed stand-up comedy on Conan, on Ellen, on HBO, and more. He has a super, super funny comedy album called Pull Yourself Up by Your Bootleg. It's so funny. Highly recommend checking it out. He has a half-hour comedy special that came out on Comedy Central's YouTube. That one's called A Different Kind of Dude. Also hilarious. Everything this guy does is freaking hilarious. He was on the show Good Trouble, in the movie Friendsgiving. He was a writer on one of my favorite shows of the last decade, A League of Their Own, which I am still not over the fact that it was unjustly canceled, and I will probably never get over it. But good job, River. That show rules. And just go watch and listen to all of the things that I just said and more immediately. I promise you will be grateful that you did. My little shame story from this week. Oh, man. So I broke my tiny toe, one of my little toes, walking into a piece of furniture. That's not the shameful part. That just happens. Bones break. The shameful part is that I broke it. And then for a week, I was walking around on it like nothing had happened. I was like, wow, my toe really hurts, but I'm probably making too big of a deal out of it. It's nothing. I don't need to go to the doctor. That's extreme. That seems excessive. And then I finally went to the doctor and the doctor was like, oh yeah, this toe is severely broken. And I was like, okay, that's good information for me to actually listen to myself and my body. And the last thing I want to share before we get into the episode is that tonight is my queer stand-up comedy show that I host with Sharia Mattis. She's an amazing fellow Brooklyn comic. It is at Littlefield. It is at 8 p.m. Janine Garofalo is fucking headlining. Sabrina Wu, a bunch of other amazing queer comics. And we have a surprise celebrity guest that I am desperate to reveal, but I'm not allowed to. But just trust me, you want to be there. You really, really, really want to be there. So you can get tickets on all of my social media, and I hope to see you there. And that is all I have for today. So let's get into it. Let's start going. Without further ado, let's start spiraling with River Butcher.
Shame burning in my brain, always in a frame, and I've only myself to blame. Shame, wishing I could forget my name and crawl back up from where I came. I'm going down the spiral once again. The shame spiral.
I actually quite literally just had like a deep experience of shame like right before this podcast. So it's, I guess, perfect timing. I'm trying to look at it that way.
Oh my God. Okay. My next question for you is going to be if you've had any spirals today, do you mind sharing what just happened? What was your deep experience?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to do some generalization about it just because some of the specifics I don't share. But I was interrupted in, I'll say, like a sacred space. And I got really upset, really upset, really, really, really upset. And I what's incredible, and I'm this, you know, we've been trying to schedule this podcast for what, like a year now?
A while.
And I'm like, it could not be more perfect timing because I quite literally am like hitting a bottom with not just shame, but everything, you know, that we'll probably get into about all of it. So it's like part of me wants to be like, well, it wasn't a spiral because it wasn't very long, but it's like, I'm grateful that it wasn't very long. And it, you know, speaks to like the progress that I've made in my own, you know, like life and healing. But man, oh man, I like what comes up in me is I want to kill, you know, like maybe not that person, but it's just this very sort of shapeless feeling of something is desperately wrong. Something mm-hmm. is desperately wrong and something bad is really going to happen. And I think that what's wild is I am realizing that other people don't feel that way. And it's also like not my fault. It's not yeah. like because I'm bad, you know, and I've felt that way for a really long time too.
Oh my God. Totally.
Me so too. So how about that for a start?
It's an amazing start. I couldn't relate more. I feel like, I think I assumed maybe in an adaptive way that everybody feels that way for a long time mm-hmm. because I was like mm-hmm. a way to tell myself that I wasn't horrible. I was like, this is just what people feel. And mm-hmm. and also just that it meant that once I realized that not everybody feels that way, then being like, oh, well, it's because I'm inherently bad, but that is also right. not true.
That's also not true. It's some way more vast and open third thing. You know, like that's the thing about life is like, it's not that there's like at least two ways. There's actually at least three ways, a minimum of three ways.
Yeah.
And the third way is always is the way that I especially when I'm in a moment of feeling in reaction, it's almost impossible for me to see or remember, you know?
I know. Well, that's what's so hard about like when you talk about this kind of stuff in therapy and you have like mm-hmm. coping skills and interventions that you can apply. It's like we all know that in that moment when you're like triggered and you're feeling that hot rage, that it's difficult to apply those things.
100%.
But it's like, okay, it's difficult. So what do you do?
Like, I know. I mean, I'll tell you what I did. And I think it was, you know, for me, I have a spiritual practice. That's a big part of it. I also go to therapy, all those things. But, you know, it wasn't my doing actually that I did this, even though, you know, if you were in my house with me, you'd be like, you did that. But it's like, I didn't make the situation possible for me to have somebody to call,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, cause I actually called multiple people and they did not answer. And then my choice was I keep trying that. And everything in me tells me like, this is your fault. Cause nobody's picked. They all know they don't want to hear it, you know, but that isn't, you know, that isn't actually like the universe's voice. You know, yeah. The universe is vast and supplies me with almost unlimited possibility. You know, I would say unlimited possibility, and my thinking is very limited. And mm-hmm. so luckily, I just heard a little whisper of a friend to call. He was available. He knew exactly what I was talking about. He heard me. He gave me space. He reflected back how much he related to that. And if it wasn't for that, I would have told you I can't do this podcast today.
Mm.
You know, and I'm glad I didn't have to do that. Like, also, that's okay. That's an okay thing to also do. But I'm so glad because we've been trying to do it for a year that I didn't have to do that, you know?
Yeah, that's really real. And it's so profound, I think, what you said about that voice that popped up for you that's like, mm-hmm. they're not picking up the phone because they know already that I'm garbage and what I have to say is garbage. Intuitively, that is the truth and they can sense it or whatever. And that's not some like deep, wise, knowing voice that's from, I mean, you know, it's like a trauma voice, an attachment voice. Yeah. It's all kinds of shit. Mm-hmm. And that's such a profound distinction to be able to make that. And it's so great that you were able to then like reach out and not like be lost in the rage and the shame for the rest of the day.
Yeah. And the thing is that I've, you know, sort of continuously not been sharing these things with people. And that is actually you know, because like you said, these modalities and these things, these all that stuff, it's like, it's great practice, you know, because all of this is just practice, at least for me. But like you said, it goes out the window. Like when this stuff happens for me, and it has changed, you know, so like what I'm grateful for is like a lot of progress that like I used to get that way if somebody cut me off in traffic, you know what I mean? And like, so now I have a little bit of pause and grace when that happens. But this was like a very, you know, tender, I was being vulnerable. And that is when I feel as though I don't have a lot of access to vulnerability. And so when I am, it's very vulnerable to me. And so anyway, I forget where I was going, but simply just that all those things are fine and good, but I can use those things to turn it off, you know, and to avoid it. And what I don't want to do is avoid it. Is like use tools like sort of as weapons against this thing, because it is here to tell me something, you know, it's here because I have abuse in my childhood and that child is trusts me enough to do that. And I have for years been like, go away. I don't want to hear this, you know, and I didn't know I didn't know that's what I was doing. And so for me, like sometimes those tools that can work for other people that maybe that's not what their story is, don't always work for me. And they can actually be detrimental, you know, because I'm avoiding it.
Yeah.
And when I was able to share with this other person who I don't know exactly their thing, but it they have enough of the thing that I have for them to go, yeah, no, I see that. I totally, and here's what happens for me. This is what I do. And it makes sense. It makes sense. You know, like it's so cliche, but it is that Goodwill Hunting moment when he's like, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. And he's like, get away from me. It's like making me cry right now. And he's like, just shut up. You know, like, don't do this. But it's like everybody needs that all the time. You know, like it's not just one and done. You know, we need that every day, basically. And sometimes I can provide it for myself and sometimes I can't. You know, and that's, I think, why we exist for each other, is to be able to give that to each other, you know?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Now I feel a little bit emotional, which I don't like, which I immediately want to avoid. I'm like,
I know,
fuck
of course,
you,
like,
River.
Let's yeah, exactly. Get rid of it. Yeah, exactly. Like, get away from me, Sean.
Yes, totally. And that's so, I love what you said about like those sort of interventions, solutions, many of them therapeutically or spiritually minded, that they're not one size fits all. And that especially, I think, some of the more topically grounded ones where it's like, well, you just take that thought or behavior and you like replace it with a positive, whatever. I mean, that's an extreme because that's like,
of course,
such spiritual bypass, whatever. That pisses me off.
Well,
But it's like, I could see how that if you don't have a lot of trauma or whatever, you're not super introspective or existential, like any of those things, maybe that could work. But you're so right that it can be confused with like, you can miss that sometimes that's avoidance and not. And that there might be a deeper reason why you're failing to implement those tools of avoidance. And that reason could be like something self-actualizing that's trying to.
Yeah.
Come through.
Yeah. That's like literally I will skip over that I'm angry, you know, to try to get to the, you know, the positive or the whatever the thing you want to say. And it's truly just being like, I am angry. This really upset me, you know, and like coming in my, I was like, thank God my partner's not here. Like I had like a house that I didn't have to like cover it up. I didn't have, you know, like I got to just be in here and then call somebody and be like, I'm really angry, like say that, you know? And then I was able to, after I got off the phone, you know, turn my thoughts to something, you know, I feel like it's like, we live in this age where social media, it allows us to have this podcast together. It allows for a lot. It allows for a lot of consciousness raising, but it also does this thing where it turns words toxic. It just like, and it also turns them into nothing. So it's just like, I hesitate to even say the word positive, you know, where it's like, because I don't know what that means to everybody that's listening, because they've heard it 1,000 times. Or like, I hear people say, you know, Pollyannish or whatever, and I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, she was trying to see the good in people no matter what. Like, that's kind of a good thing, you know, that we could all strive for. We don't have to nail it, you know. So it's like, after being able to like be aware of this thing and accept it and not skip over the acceptance, then I was able to, you know, forgive myself, forgive that person, have a new experience, you know, without like causing major damage to myself and other people, you know,
mm-hmm.
including my dog, you know,
including your dog.
he's very little intuitive guy, and I don't want to come home and like throw stuff around, you know. And like,
oh, I
was upset on the phone, and I think he went under the bed because of that, but it wasn't directed at him. And so I know it was actually like a healthy expression of what was going on for me. And I have been so afraid for so long that if I really express those things to people, they will leave, mm-hmm. you know, because that was my history. Mm-hmm. And I also can see how I molded my feelings and my emotions, specifically anger, rage, into complaining.
Oh,
as
yeah.
opposed to, which is like, of course, no, of course, you know, criticism, complaining, instead of being like, I'm upset, this upset me, can you deal with it right now? No? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll be back, you know? But like, yeah. it just, I didn't have those tools. Like, those are the kinds of things that actually, that I need in this moment, you know, of 2023.
Totally. Rare and lucky is the person who grows up with those tools. You know, it's like,
I know. And it, I mean, it's shocking that there are people like that. I've met them.
Who? I don't know if anyone in our generation really grew up with those tools. I feel like maybe kids now, some.
Maybe.
But I
also think about, but before that, it's like people were being abused, and that was parenting.
Yes. Too.
So it's like, I don't know that anybody. I do think, like you said, I think it is rare, but I think what's interesting and what I need to do in my own thinking is like, yes, it can be rare, but we are also a planet of billions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, rare within that is actually kind of a lot of people.
That's true.
And I try to, and this is just me, put the fact that there are people that grew up with those tools and who are capable of these things means I am too.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I got the short end of the stick. It doesn't mean, because I know that they are going through things that I actually have the tools for that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, which is why like the person was available for me. So if somebody calls me, I have, it's like, none of this is like us versus them.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like that can be such a supportive stance, and it's really hard to exist in that, mm-hmm. when you're used to feeling just like full of resentment and rage, because then it's like, you don't want to be, you want to be like, I got fucking ripped off, you know?
Of course. Yeah.
But it's actually like, doesn't do anything to support moving forward. No. It just keeps you stuck in that rage, you know, in comparison and all that shit.
100%.
I think that's really
cool.
And
it keeps you in the past, and it takes you out of the present.
100%.
Because then, you know, I can't see, like, and that's a practice too, of just like slowing down and being like, oh, right, I'm not back there. That's not happening right now. It did happen. I come by this honestly. Like, having that phrase in my, like, you know, tool belt or whatever, of like, oh, I come by this very honestly. And remembering I am an adult doesn't mean I'm not going to have these kinds of feelings. It just means I'm an adult and I'm capable, and I might need a moment, you know, like, I might need a snack. I might need a rest. I might need all these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just being willing to seek those things, I think, is the turning my thoughts to something positive. And when I say positive in this particular context, I actually mean, I don't mean positivity. I mean possibility,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to negative, which is impossibility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like turning my thoughts and opening I can get really myopic when these things happen. And it's like I'm looking through a pinhole, you know? So It's like, to me, turning my thoughts to possibility really widens that scope,
you know?
And then I get to be, once I am capable of going, maybe, like, it kind of takes off from there and I don't have to do very much, you know? In fact, I don't do anything after that, you know?
Totally.
Something else.
Yeah, because you're not like stuck in that like rigid trauma stance where you're like, I'm just going to like suffer on this mountain. There's no food and no water. And that's how it has to be. Like once you're like, actually, there's water.
It's always been. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like yesterday, like you're saying, Elliot's like, I noticed like I didn't eat lunch and I was like, oh, this is a flag that I'm not taking care of myself. Mm. And like this little abused kid has taken over. And it is my responsibility as an adult to take care of myself, you know, and go like, hey, we're going to eat now because we need to do that. You know,
It's really hard
and
to
not go
rewire.
Into the like, but I never. And it's like, yeah, you didn't. I hear you. But I'm here now.
Right. Like you deserve. It's much harder than it can sound. Like, yeah, you deserve lunch and. Sometimes you need to remind yourself that a million times and that's fine.
Oh yeah. And I know I'm not feeling well and like accepting, you're not feeling good today. Okay. Well, let me take over for you. And I like did something. I went and got this very specific lighter because I was like, the material thing is not the solution. But right now I got to get this little kid a gift. I really do. I really got to get them something that they really want. And it was like this, it's like the hillbilliest lighter. And I say that because I'm a hillbilly. I could get it and I'll show it to you. But
yeah, show it
to like
me.
A torch. It's like a, hang on a sec. It is a butane torch. Right?
It's awesome.
It's so awesome. And I've been looking for it. You can only really get it in a liquor store. And I was like, all right, where is there? I went to Smart and Final because this guy told me it would be there. Couldn't find it there. And I was like, all right, well, I know where this other liquor store is over there. Cause my partner, when the vaccines first started, she was like taking these vouchers. She was working for the neighborhood city council. And I was like, okay, there's one over there. Cause they wouldn't put anything up. I remember that one. But then as I turned out, there was a tobacco store and I was like, they will have it. And I just went in there and it was like walking into another world and also my past because I just like grew up in, I'll put it kindly, a rowdy neighborhood with lots of liquor stores and lots of like tobacco outlets. And I was like, wow, I'm really taking this kid to get them something they really want. And I got it and I tipped the guy and I brought it home and it like lit the incense because it's like, I used to smoke. I don't do those things anymore. I don't do any of those things anymore, but it was just like satisfying something that little kid was just like, but I want this thing. And I'm like, okay, cool. This is not unreasonable for you to want this.
Yeah. I love that so much. Do you like think about like little baby kid River? Often like as a sort of construct and give him what he wants and needs?
You know, I do. And I think that something, you know, this conversation is even helping me realize that I have not been like listening to him for a long time. Maybe he just hasn't needed it. I don't know. You know, maybe I don't have to find fault. Maybe I can just notice that he's around and you know, I carry all my ages with me, you know? And, you know, I'm a trans guy and I also carry that person with me. And sometimes she's around and I listen for her, because I've done some practices to like, let her go. But I think sometimes she's still around to like, let me know. Some, I don't always know what, you know, but,
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very, you know, in my own healing, like actually seeing children out in the world and realizing how small I've been and seeing how small I was when these things happened, you know, because when we recall them, we recall them as the adults that we are now. And then I start to have this like, well, you could have, and it's like, no, nah, I was five. Mm-hmm. I was very small, you know, very, very, very small. And so, you know, it is a practice to really spend time with that kid, you know, because it can't just be like, okay. You know, it's like, hey, I'm here, you know, and being really, you know, setting aside like an hour and a consistent hour that I'm not on my phone. I may be reading a book or something that, you know, like that is like passive enough that that child can feel safe to come back to me, but not so much that I'm like checked out and doing my own thing. You know?
Yeah.
But it is a practice that I've done imperfectly for a little over 4.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Do you do those things? No.
I mean, I am just, you know, my background is as a therapist. You know that about me?
I didn't know that.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah. So
like to, when I do podcasts and I host one, I mean, maybe this is a detriment. I don't know. I don't like to do a lot of research because I like to learn in the conversation.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I totally get
so
that.
So I didn't know that.
Well, that's true. And I'm such a hypocrite. I'm just like, but I'm just so bad at giving myself the things that I know everybody deserves. And I can think on like one hand the times when like that kind of like little Ellie has come up in therapy. And I'm always just like, get the fuck out of here. Like, what the fuck do you think you're doing here? I don't want to talk to you. And it's totally like that anger and that, like, to think about where we started, like that kind of like, I'll kill you. Like, it's totally just me feeling so uncomfortable with my own vulnerability, needing anything. Yep. I just like, I have a hard time really. Like, I'm good at intellectualizing my needs at this point. Mm-hmm. I have my like biggest struggle is actually sitting with the feelings. Like, I mean, and I'm an alcoholic. Like, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've been sober forever. So like, yeah, I'm not good at feeling. I'm like, I have done many things to try to not feel my feelings. Now I'm sober. I still find other ways to avoid, you know, like social media or, well, I have kids too. So it's easy to avoid my feelings
because
I'm fucking busy. But
yeah.
No, I suck at it. I would like to be better. That's my sort of in some answer.
Yeah. I mean, my whole thing is I am, this is just me right now in this moment. I'm throwing better out the window. Like, that word doesn't work for me. I would like to be, you know, I would like to be, and I can try. I can do. That's about it, you know, because like I'm not trying to improve myself. I'm not trying to better myself. I'm not trying to be a better human like everybody's talking about. I want to accept myself for everything that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes all the quote unquote bad stuff.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, that's the first part, you know.
Definitely.
Because I don't think I can accept myself as good if I don't accept myself as bad, you know, quote unquote, again.
Totally.
Because it's not, the thing is, it's not me. Like, none of those things are really me, you know. I didn't, it's, you know, maybe behaviors or, you know, mistake, all that stuff. And it's like, everybody does these things, you know. We're not, even the people we talked about that have like all the tools and stuff, it's like they still cut somebody off in part, in you know what I mean? It's like we just are doing our best. You know, that's kind of, that's all we've got, you know?
Yeah, everybody is messy and flawed. And I have that same issue with even the idea of like self-improvement, because it's sort of rooted in an idea that you're not good enough already.
And 100%.
It's like, so it's just, it can be really harmful in that way. And I agree with you. Like, I think that it's one of those paradoxical things where like, the more you can kind of accept yourself in every single iteration of what that means, you can probably have what you need to make the changes you would like to make that would just feel better for you.
100%.
But the punishing road where you're just like, I suck now and this is how I'm going to be better. That doesn't get, it's not. Punishing doesn't work. Like shame doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. It doesn't. I was just laughing about this with somebody else. Like, get down off your cross. We need the wood, you know? That's not what any of this, like, I know that out in the world, this is what religions do, you know, because people do them. But that is not what they were intended to do. It's actually not. None of them. Because if you actually read the thing, you know, if you read the holy books of the things, they're all about, like, you know, pain is going to happen, but suffering is optional, you know? And for some of us, it feels less optional, but that doesn't mean it's not possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about, you were saying, you know, accepting yourself, then you might be able to make the changes you need. Something that I've experienced in my life in a short amount of time is that the more I accept myself, the less changes I need.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, it's like the things you thought.
I thought, mm-hmm. yes, precisely. I thought all this needed to change. I thought I needed this, that, the other thing. And I actually, now I don't.
Oh my God. I love that so much. I feel like that's probably true for so many people.
A lot of people.
You're reminding me of something that makes me laugh in such a tender way now when I think about it. Mm-hmm. I have such a memory of being in my early 20s. I was living in New York City and was just such a mess. I mean, everyone is in their early 20s pretty much, but like, I was really chaotic. And I used to sit in coffee shops before I went to my waitressing job and write lists obsessively of all the things I needed to change about myself.
Oh, wow.
And the lists were, it was always like, maybe drink less, which like was the only thing that really needed to be on that list. But then it was also shit like, do the New York Times crossword puzzle. Like, read all the books you didn't read in high school. Like, shit. Like, as though those things would make me a better person. And, I'm just like, oh, honey. Oh, honey, that list.
A bunch of little sweeties, you know?
Yes.
I know. There's a lot of things I thought I needed to do. And it turns out, like, a lot of those things I thought I needed are actually wants. Mm. You know? And I've gotten to know, like, oh, these are wants. I want to do the crossword. I want to, you know, read more books. You know, I want to, like, oh, that's what this is. It's not that if I do this, then.
Yes.
You know? And that's a lot, that has been a lot of thinking that is still being unwound. You know, I have belief. I don't maybe yet have the faith that what is happening for me right now is perhaps a dismantling of perfectionism. Because for me, I think that that is one of the ways that it shows up, is thinking that my wants are needs. And then being like, I have no needs, you know, like then being able to, to throw those in and out. And it's like, when I really slow down and look at it, like, my needs are met. My needs are absolutely met on a daily basis. At least right now. I don't have to worry about tomorrow because I've only got today. Mm-hmm. My needs are met. My wants are not always met. And I'm allowed to have them.
Yeah.
I can have wants and desires. And putting them on paper has been really powerful for me, because it took so much out of it. And I put them in a notebook. I did like the artist's way. And I swear to God, she says at the end of this, have your creative notebook, put these categories of wants down. Check in with them. And I did that. I was like, you know, whatever. Didn't want to do it, but I did it. And a lot of them came true and I didn't even try.
Wow. That's
wasn't even like cognizantly like, well, now I've got it. It's like, it just sort of happened, because the thing is true that I don't have to, again, work that hard.
Yeah.
All I have to do is ask and see.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, and just own that's what you want. And then that's like clear to you.
And sort of let it go.
Putting it out in the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You made me think about the wants versus needs or like things that you should be doing. That is so fascinating to me. I feel like that's so true. It makes me think about that coffee shop moment I shared with you, because it's it's as if I was saying, like, do the New York Times crossword puzzle, like with a knife to my throat, like, you better do that crossword puzzle, you little piece of shit, you know? And it's like, of course I wasn't going to do it then. But if I had just been like, I'd like to, I think that would be fun. Maybe that I would have fucking done it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the other thing, Ellie. You could do it today if you want.
I know. The thing is in my older age, I've also accepted some things like I do not need to. I don't actually want to do that. I have no desire to do that. I don't have no desire to have a cute hobby. Like there's things I've let go of that I always thought would make me a better person. It's fine.
Yeah, that's great.
It's good. Okay, so we're going to play the shame game. Okay. I'm going to ask you a couple scenarios, and I want you to consider which scenario would be more likely to make you have a bigger shame spiral.
Okay.
So, all right. So you play baseball, correct?
I do. Uh-oh. Okay.
I did a small amount of research. Okay.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Now, it sounds like you have a partner that you've been with for a long time.
We 5 years in October.
Okay. So let's just say that you're dating. This is an alternate aesthetic world.
Of course. Sure. Yeah.
And you're dating someone that you really like. It's pretty new, like within the first year. And you like her so much. You're obsessed with her. You're like, she's the one. And she brings you to her family's house, and let's say she comes from money, and it's like, dare I even say, like a compound in fucking Maine or something, like a very New England kind of thing. And it's a family reunion. And there's a big wiffle ball game that's going to happen, a big family wiffle ball game. This is the first time you've met her family. And her dad and her brother. Oh, and let's just say, like, as a baseline, her family is cool. They're like queer, trans affirming. That is not a thing. Yeah. Like, that's not part of the story. Everyone's cool. Everyone's support. But the dad and the brother are like cis dudes, and they're very like New England money cis bros. And they're talking shit about the wiffle ball game all day. They're like, we're going to take you down, like, blah, blah, blah. And you get just kind of like cocky and sort of like, I'm actually really good at baseball. Like, I'm going to fucking take you guys down. I'm a killer. And then the wiffle ball game comes, and you strike out every fucking single time you're up to bat. Like, you cannot hit that fucking ball. And they are like roasting you to hell. You are just getting like so angry and upset. And then you're up for the last time that you're going to be up in the game, and you are just like so fired up. You hit the ball so hard, it goes right into the dad of the girl that you're dating's face, and like breaks his fucking nose.
Man, I hit that wiffle ball hard.
You crushed that wiffle ball. So that's scenario one.
Okay, that's scenario one. Okay. All right.
Scenario two is, okay, so you're from the Midwest, right? I am also from the Midwest.
Akron, Ohio.
So you have some old friends from childhood, whatever, some stage of childhood. I'm assuming if they're anything like my Illinois friends, like, no, everyone still lives in Ohio, or like a lot of people still like live in the area and everything. You've left, though. Obviously, you've moved along.
Yeah.
One of your friends in that group of friends or people that you know from that time gets into a car accident and is like recovering in the hospital. And some of your other friends, you're on this group email, and they're like, River, will you make like a funny video, like, to cheer her up? Like, just like do a little joke, like do your jokes. And you're like, God fucking damn it. Like, I don't want to do that shit. You care about the friend, you know, but you're like, I will. They're like texting you. They're like, come on, like, you're too important for us now. Like, blah, blah, blah. You're like, I'll do it. I'll do it. And then she takes a turn for the worse. She goes into a coma before you send the fucking video. And I just want to say, to make this less excruciating, she does ultimately recover.
Okay, good.
Comes out of the coma, does not die.
I'm worried about my rhetorical friend.
I knew I would be too. That's why I'm saying this. But you have to sit with having not sent that video in time for, let's say, like a month or two.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It. Those are the two scenarios.
So which one would I have more shame about?
Yeah.
I'm going to say, just knowing myself, that I would, and this is easy because you're telling me this person's going to make it, but I would go with the wiffle ball one. And okay. Not shame over hitting the person, because that's a natural course of possibility. And as I say that, I realize this part is too. And maybe this will give me a little more empathy for myself moving forward, but I would be really ashamed of striking out.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was a podcast party for its 10-year anniversary, and they had a dunk tank. And my friend Paul was in it. And everybody was like trying to get me to do it because I play baseball and I'm so good at baseball. Now, I struggle with the yips. I don't know if, are you familiar with that?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it is purely a mental problem. It has no physical component to it, except the physical component is you're incapable of throwing or swinging a golf club or whatever. And it's really embarrassing. And then the embarrassment continues the thing. And so then eventually I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. Because that experience, I was like, no, I'm just not going to do it. That's better. That's probably better. And looking back, yeah. I'm like, that was better. That would have been better. Because then I threw, and I literally threw it over the thing, like over the dunk tank. And everybody was kind of like, oh. Now, it was a bunch of people that I've known for a while. And I got to have the experience of being like ashamed and then being like, these people do love me, though. And they might laugh, but they might also go like, oh, maybe River just likes baseball. Maybe I don't have to be the best at it. Maybe I can just like it and play it. Because, like, here's the thing. I'm pretty good at it. I'm not the best at it. Mm-hmm. Then somebody came up and just chucked it. This person, like, was like a butch. I don't know how they identify exactly, but, like, a butch AFAB person, and just went bing. And I was like, ooh, that's what I want, you know?
Yeah.
And so I say that because I'm like, it is like a triggering space for me. And like, I know, like, for the video thing, I'm like, yeah, no, I wouldn't want to do that. I would make an earnest video for a friend. But if my people were like, you got to make a silly, funny video, I'd be like, no, I'm not going to do that. And if they wouldn't accept the other thing, I'd be like, okay, well, that's not what works. So it's like, yeah. I would, in the situation with the friend, I would know myself, you know, but in the situation with baseball, I struggle to know myself. And it's been like a 10-year experience with that thing of going, and I'm sort of breaking through to a new side with it, where I'm like, yeah, I don't have to be the best at this thing to prove anything. You know, that's what it is that I'm always stepping out into an athletic thing to prove something. And there's definitely some gender stuff, obviously, some gender stuff in there that is like, oh, got to turn this over and realize my teammates love me. They do not care. They don't care. They're just happy I'm here. But it's hard to remember that, you know?
Oh, it is.
Anyway,
I
hope that answered that question.
It does.
And I would, of course, feel sorry for hurting somebody. I would never want to hurt somebody. But I would also say that, like, you know, talking smack and being kind of shitty, which is why I don't do that, tends to magnetize those things towards yourself. But I would never say that in the situation, you know what I mean?
But it's
like, I've gotten hurt when I'm in that mindset of like overly competitive, lack of sportsmanship, you know, like, not to say competitive period, but overly competitive and being like mean to people or not kind or whatever. It's like, oh, this is when I get hit in the face, you know, like that is, because it's like, I am not present. I care more about this other stuff, you know? So anyway, that's my answer to that one. I'm going to go with the baseball one.
I get it. Maybe I shouldn't have let her live, the friend in the coma, but
but I also, I don't know that I would have felt shame about that, though. You know?
Yeah, because
like, I just
you,
truly,
yeah.
That's what's wild about this. And I'm like being brutally honest, because it's like, you know, everything in my ego wants to say, oh, the video, because it's this dying person. But it's like, that's not, I don't matter to that person's dying experience.
Right.
You yeah. know, like,
no, I do.
The way that I show up or the way that people think I should show up doesn't matter. Maybe now that's giving me some empathy that I can put into the baseball thing, but it's like, it's all related.
It is. The baseball one's really rough. I mean, I think that I would probably choose the baseball one too.
Yeah.
Even though in my version, it like doesn't also come replete with gender stuff. It's just, I'm such a perfectionist. It's so, mm-hmm. I mean, I was into softball as a kid. I played Little League, and
yeah.
in eighth grade, I struck out in the final inning and like lost the playoffs for my team.
Yeah.
Eighth grade, my dad was watching, who like wanted to be a pro baseball player his whole life, you know? Mm-hmm. And I quit. Like, I was one of those, like, I quit. I never played again. I never played on a team again, even though I was very passionate about softball. So I, like, the thought at, like, a family party being roasted, that's a nightmare. It's a nightmare scenario.
A nightmare. Yeah. I would also like to think that if I was being roasted by people, I would probably be like, you know, I think I'm good. Like, that in that scenario, like, to and I'm, you know, I want to play your game. But in that scenario, what I would do is probably not participate. You know, that's probably what I would do, because I don't love, like, I love baseball, which is why I wouldn't participate in it if it's going to be like that. You know,
that's so healthy. I'm impressed. That's great.
I mean, that's just part of my tiny amounts of progress. You know, just like, you know, I don't debate things that aren't up for debate for me. And so I do my best to not enter into, you know, harmful situations. That's part of the inner child stuff too. It's like, I don't, if, you know, it, one of my barometers for it is like, would I let a 5-year old, would I leave a 5-year old in that situation? No, then I'm not going to put myself in there.
I love that.
You know?
Yes. That's such a great metric. And I feel like that is such a sign of like growth and just getting older. Like, if you're kind of allowing yourself to grow as you get older, because like when you're like, I feel like when I was younger, I would sense a situation like that where it's like clearly toxic and harmful. Mm-hmm. And my impulse is like, well, I got to get closer to that shit. Like, I got to get there.
Of course.
And now
I got to get in there. I got to fix it. I've got to be the good part of it or something, or
I've got to save it, or I've got to confirm how bad I am or whatever. And
or
now
I'm just quite literally drawn to it with no thought whatsoever.
Totally, just like a zombie. But
there it is.
Now I'm much more likely to be like, oh, I don't want any part of that, you know. I feel grateful for that.
I'm good.
Okay, so moving away from the hypothetical, I know you kind of started with a shame story. Did you also bring like a shame story from your life?
I mean, I didn't, because I've been just in this situation where it was actually kind of hard for me to parse one out. You know, I've just been in this experience for the pet. It's been a good week or so, maybe a little longer. But oh man, there was like this little fleeting one. Well, I mean, I told you about I actually was going to bring up the podcast one, the podcast party one.
The dunk tank thing.
Cause I definitely felt it was a real, test to stay there and remain kind, confident, not bring it up. I didn't bring it up.
Like obsessively, you didn't process
to then like try that. To, you know, process it on somebody, make them tell me nice things, you know, whether I knew it. And it was just like, nope, it just happened and it's not happening now. And care about that's the other thing, is like to then be like, hey, it's so good to see you. It's been so long. What are you up to? What have you been up to? Oh, tell me more. It's been, oh my God, it's been so long, you know? It's so good to see you, like caring about like in that moment, like, because that's just me being like really self-centered. And I just didn't know that stuff before. It's like, well, yeah, this was terrible. I should be able to process. It's like, who really wants to wallow around in the muck with me? I don't know. Other muck wallowers, you know?
Well, yes, exactly. And also when you're doing that, like you're looking for something you're never going to get. Like no one 100%. Is ever going to be like, it was fine. Like it, like nothing mm-hmm. anyone will say will give you the relief you're trying to right. get for yourself.
Because even you're right. Because even if they say it was fine, then they're going to like look away and I'm going to read something into that, you know, because I'm trying to find the more fault in it, even though I think I want, because it's like this hole that I can never fill. And the only way that it can be filled is by something, you know, bigger.
Yeah.
That's not me. And again, it's like this other stuff that we're talking about. It's like I have to open myself to the possibility. And the not talking about it was opening myself to the possibility that it's okay. And yes. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. Literally, right. Nobody cares more than me.
No one's even thinking about it for more than a no. hot second.
For more than a hot second.
I know. That is like what I usually think of when I think about self-centeredness, which people don't always like. That's not necessarily mm-hmm. the like more right, broad yeah, cultural, sort of
cultural
idea of it.
Thing is, yeah.
But it's like the idea of like having your energy and attention on yourself instead of the world around you and people around you in a way that is just hurts you so much, like rather yes. than being like about how you always like talk too much or take the last piece of pizza. Like that's just bullshit. Like that's yeah. nothing. That's
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
No, but that's so true. Like you can just be like, I'm moving on and engaging. Mm-hmm. And then there's other things that this night is about. Like that's the possibility. Yes. Like the night is now about something besides the dunk tank. Whereas yes. it could, you could have defined it the whole night as that if you stayed in that. Yeah. And the shame spiral that it perpetuates, like one of the worst bombs I had this year where I just like something bad happened. I just like something bad happened in my set and then I did not handle it well. And then I just ate mm-hmm. shit more and more and more. And that yeah. was fully shameful, of course. But then the thing that I feel the most shame about is in the green room, I could not stop myself from talking about it. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking about it with fucking everyone yeah. as though that was going to like make it better for myself. And then that became an even worse spiral because.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, the worst.
Because it's just like still spinning.
Still know? Spinning. And no one
so
was going to
like
be
sucking
like,
everything in.
Ellie, you're a genius. And that didn't happen, which is like
yeah.
what I wished
yeah,
for.
Right.
But it did.
But then even if they said that, I guarantee you, Ellie, it wouldn't have been good enough.
Nothing. No, nope.
There would have been something about that wouldn't have worked. You know, it's funny. I like this is actually not a shame spiral, but I did a show in Los Angeles. This was probably around November of last year. It feels like where it was. And I just fell flat on my face. It's like, I just ate shit. I was like, oh, this is what people mean when they say you died up there. Because I had the distinct experience of this old, you know, I've spoken about the person, my old person, I guess. Like mm-hmm. I don't like to use dead name personally. Other people can, totally valid. I like to say old name. And so the old person, it was like I couldn't tell who I was on for that 7 minutes. It mm-hmm. was like I couldn't make a decision. I didn't know what was happening. And I'm sure that if I asked the people in the audience, they'd be like, I mean, it wasn't that bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But my experience of it was very distinctly confusing, void, it just strange, you know? And I got off stage and I was like, oh my God, I haven't eaten shit like that in a long time. And these comics came over and they were like, no, it wasn't. And I really appreciated what they were doing. Like, I felt very loved, you know? Mm. I felt very loved by, like, a community that can often feel very isolating, you know? Mm-hmm. And I told them both, I was like, I really appreciate what you're doing. It's okay, actually. Because it was a deeper experience than, like, oh, I just sucked. Mm-hmm. You know? Which is hard, you know, when you just suck. You know, sometimes that happens. Because yeah. it was, like, this other thing, you know? And I just was able to, like... And I know I had some shame that night. You know, I have perspective today, so I can talk about it in a different way. But I know I felt ashamed of that because it did not go the way that I wanted it to go. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it does. And I kind of was like, oh, I'm not like, I haven't let this person go. I haven't told them like that they can go do whatever they want now. And I also haven't told them that they're welcome anytime.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they're coming back at inopportune moments.
Yeah.
And then being like, hey, you know,
oh my God.
And like, this is not the moment for that, you know? And so maybe I need to, you know, have some tea with them, you know, or like yeah. welcome them, you know, say you're welcome anytime. It's hard when I'm on stage though.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's lovely. I mean, it's so funny what you said about like it, that it was not just like a bomb. Like it wasn't just like, you kind of sucked. It's like you were having like a really found like fundamentally important intrapsychic moment, yeah.
but an existential moment.
But during a set, which is but not
during
opportune.
A 7-minute set. Yeah. Not the best moment, but also the only moment. That's the other thing. You know, it's like, this is the only when is this going to happen in the car wash? I probably would have ignored it. You know what I mean? It's like, of course she came back then. Cause it's like, well, first of all, this is where we hung out most of the time.
Oh yeah.
So it's like, of course you came back here. And then second of all, like, I don't know that I would have paid attention. In the yard or whatever. I wouldn't have maybe been listening, you know? So it's like, of course this is when this happened. Of course.
That is so interesting. Like, how did I feel like maybe it's too difficult to put into words, but I'm so curious mm-hmm. to understand like how you felt their presence, like what was happening for you.
I didn't know at the time, but it truly felt like the only way. Have you ever seen Terminator 2?
No.
No? Okay.
I know. Well, it's one of those things.
No, it's okay. Can't. That was not a judgmental no. I'm so happy for you whenever you get to see it. I'm jealous. Because it actually is quite good. It's quite good. So but are you aware that the one Terminator is like a shapeshifter?
Yes.
That he can like kind of okay. He can replicate like kind of anything, any person. And then any machinery that doesn't have moving parts, so simple machines. He can't turn himself into a gun. So humans and like pokey things, and hammers and stuff like that. So there's a moment where he's sort of like fritzing out and changing into everything that we've seen him change. And it felt like that, you know, it just felt like this sort of, cause it, in the moment it felt like, oh, I'm just dying. I'm eating shit, you know, but then later I was able to have the perspective of, oh, I think that's what that was. An indecision between, because stand up is a character, even if you're mm-hmm. playing a character that's really, really close in, and I'm touching my nose for everybody that can't see me. Because a lot of people, you know, I don't play some like highly, you know, my character on stage is truly just like a couple like moments away from myself. And so that was why it was so confusing.
Yeah.
Because it was like also that character and also that, you know, and a birth of this new character and sort of like both of those things like wrestling a bit with each other, you know, and not mm-hmm. in a violent way, you know. So that's how I was able to have the perspective later of like, oh, this isn't just you being not good at what you do. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, something new is taking shape. And yeah. I actually think that's what every bomb is anyways, you know, because like, I just don't think that like, I have to have that perspective, you know, like failure happens, you know, and like every time that I've had a set not go well, I've learned something from it. It's rare, I think, and I say this in baseball, and every time I say it before a game, we tend to lose. But I don't learn as much from winning as I do from losing.
That's so true.
There's a comic who I won't name because they're one of, you know, whatever. I don't believe in canceling people or whatever the thing is, you know, but it's somebody whose name I don't want to repeat. But I do think that this is actually wisdom for the craft, which is that like, if you meet a comic who has not bombed, it's just waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say bombing is not the sign of a bad comedian, you know, mm-hmm. like it's actually the sign of a good one. Like if it hasn't happened to you, it's gonna happen. It's just gonna happen. And so like get over it, you know, like get over it. I'm like reading this book about a fiction novel about and one of the characters is this highly efficient, proficient shortstop who made no errors and then all of a sudden made an error and now can't stop making errors. And it's like, failure is part of the game.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. It's part of the whole thing. And so when we get into, you know, failure is not an option and all that stuff, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of the only option, actually. Mm.
It's the only option if you're interested in taking any risks. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You can't, that, I mean, I wish I had learned that so much younger than I learned it, because I would just quit shit. Like I told you
before
with softball, I just quit it if I wasn't amazing immediately. I didn't know you had to work hard at something to be amazing, and that it involved eating shit.
Yeah,
and everything changed for me when I accepted that.
Not being able to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was like, I've always been sort of like athletically talented. You know, as a child, I just would pick things up and be able to do them. And in particular, gender constraints of our society and the time in which I was born, that made things easy. Mm-hmm. And then when they got hard, I was like, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm naturally gifted at this. And it's like, I want to pick up the guitar and be able to play Led Zeppelin or whatever, you know?
Totally.
And it's like, that's not how it works. You know, I know that from having learned it to play the guitar, but it's been a new practice of like, oh, practice is the thing, actually.
I know.
You know?
I know.
Yeah, we're both continually just in practice and also in game seven every day.
Yeah.
You know? And not in a pressure way, but just in like, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's so true. And it's infinitely more meaningful and satisfying when you have an experience that feels like a success. When you've been working so hard at something, like the meaning that I would get from accomplishing something when I was like, this just comes naturally to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, it doesn't even feel like it means anything. It just, for me, it fed that voice of like, well, you just continually trick everybody into thinking you're great. And now when I work hard at something, I agree with you that like, I feel like when you crush a set, like you don't really take away much except like some dopamine and
Feels great.
It feels good, but you do learn so much from when it doesn't go well in a very more textured way.
And the times that it goes well feel so much better because you went through the thing when it didn't go as planned and as you wanted it to go. You know, and the times that it goes well, it's like, I go like, oh, this is what I do. You know, I get to have those moments of like, oh, I'm capable of this. This is what it feels like to be in the pocket. This is what it feels like to be in the flow of my purpose. This is what it feels like to do the thing I wish to do. You know, that's kind of what I try to walk away from that with, you know. And then when it doesn't go the way that I want, you know, like I was just at JFL, which is Just for Laughs in Montreal. It's like the industry event in comedy. And so I was doing a taping, which is a thing they do. Many people do it, but I was lucky to be doing it. And they do this thing where they have like you run that set they call it a club, but it's not a comedy club. It's like just a venue. And you run it with a bunch of other people and they time you and the producers are there. And I had a similar experience where I just kind of was indecisive and I was playing to the room and not just running the set, and it didn't go well. It did not go well. It was not a good set. I was first up. I didn't come out with it. I wasn't decisive. And I was like, that's what I didn't do. You know, it was like very clear. And the producer was just like stunned. She was just like, her eyes were all like, you know, and I had to very quickly move out of my own feelings of, you know, shame of, you know, whatever. And just sort of be like, yeah, I didn't, you know, I just didn't make a decision. I didn't, you know, whatever. And she was like, but you're just such a, and was saying all these very complimentary things, but it was very like, she was very worried. And eventually I just said, what do I need to say to convince you that it's going to be all right tomorrow? And she was like, I just don't know. And I realized there was nothing I could say. And this was up to me. Mm-hmm. And I talked to other comics. They were very supportive because I was worried, you know, I was worried. And I talked to these other comics. It was so helpful, so caring and kind. Didn't need to talk to a bunch of people. Did my own stuff, had my own spiritual practice around it the next day. Changed the jokes. I was like, I'm not doing those jokes. I don't like them. I don't want to do it. That's not what I want to do. And wrote it out and was like, this is what I think. Sent it up to my, you know, universal power and all that stuff. And then I went and I had a different approach. I was very calm in the green room. I was talking to other comics. I watched a lot of the show. When it got close to being my turn to be pulled up there, I found a quiet place to go and did that thing for a moment. And then I went up and I absolutely crushed it. I had like one of the best sets and I just like felt so good about it. And it was only because I failed so hard the night before.
Yeah.
You know, like it truly was that. And many things in between. But would I have considered it as much as I did? Would I have honored it as much as I had? Would I have taken those steps to do those things? Would I have gotten myself out of the way as much as I did? Probably not. Probably not. And all it required was me embarrassing myself in front of 200 people.
Oof.
To have a taping in front of 3,000 people go magnificent.
That's so worth it.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, cool. You know, it doesn't always go that way, but it happened to go this way.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely worth it. You know, for my own self-esteem, you know, because the taping is the thing. That's it. It's done.
Right.
You know, for my own self-esteem and my own self-worth to be like, oh, yeah, you are capable of this. You do know how to do this.
Yeah. And in a way, I mean, in a way, like that rehearsal, whatever, taping, like what did exactly what it needed to do.
Yeah.
Like you ended up doing a whole different set also.
Yes. Yeah, a whole different thing. And like that is exactly, you know, like I relate it to baseball in this way. Like, often it's happened in my own team, but there was a game a couple years ago, I believe it was Atlanta and the Cardinals. And it was like, you know, baseball is this game of like continually, oh, it's the first time this has ever happened. You know, you play the game for 150 years and we keep running into this has never happened before. I believe Atlanta put up 13 runs in the first inning. They were away. So it was the very first inning, the top of the inning. They put up 13 runs on the Cardinals. I don't think that's ever happened before in specifically the first inning. And I was like, well, I mean, I got to say, out of any time in a baseball game, the first inning is the best time to be down by 13 because you have the whole rest of the game to come back. Because that's the crazy thing about baseball is that 13 is not an insurmountable number. Actually, when you have nine innings to play. And so like to me, to your point, Ellie, exactly the same thing. Like out of the taping and the rehearsal, when is the better show to eat shit?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm going to say the rehearsal, actually.
Yes. And it's so great that you were able to like not just get crushed by what happened, but like, like we've been talking about this whole conversation, like see the possibility and move forward. And I'm so curious, like you were saying that like you were indecisive, like that was part of what made it rough. And then also the fact that you like changed the whole set, like when you look back now, like was there a way that you had decided on the initial set that feels like wasn't aligned with you?
Definitely. Because I mean, they're all my jokes and I do love all the jokes. But it's interesting that you picked up on that because they asked me to provide a transcript and I literally was like, what are the easiest jokes for me to write out? What are the easiest jokes for me to take up 7 minutes?
I totally get that. Do you have ADHD? Yeah. Do you have ADHD?
I haven't been diagnosed with that or anything. I mean, it's possible. I don't know.
You might.
It's like, who doesn't? I kind of am at this point, and truly, I know that that's probably offensive to people who has it, but it's also like, I feel like at this point, like, yeah, I could self-diagnose myself with that, but I don't know that I actually have, though.
You might not. I have it. I'm not offended at all by what you just said. Yeah.
I think, I just mean by anybody that's listening. I know. I take it legitimately, but
I mean, I'm projecting too, but there's something so relatable to me about like, well, this is how I can make this task more manageable.
Yeah.
But yeah. That was the sort of metric you were using. Like, that's what determined the set, like not actually what was going to feel the most alive for you.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that for me, the reason why I don't think it's necessarily an ADHD thing is that I have a tendency to discount stand-up specifically. I love it. And I want for it to continue to be my job. But there's some critical voice in there that's like, this is not it. You're not good enough. It's not a value. You're not, you know, whatever. What you're not. And then fill in the blank. And for me, I think that was a symptom of that, as opposed to how can I get this over with? Which I think how can I get this over with is a symptom of that, too, of not going like, this is important to me. Not how important is this to other people?
Oh my God. Right. You know? So like, yeah, so that sort of manifesting as like, how can I do this? It was actually coming from this much deeper struggle around like
a struggle of like, this isn't important enough. You're not important enough. You're not good at it. You're not famous enough for it, you know, whatever.
Oh my
God. And dismissing it. Yes. You know, like,
yes.
And it wasn't like a giant, that's the thing, is it's not a monkey with cymbals saying this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, just a little bit. It speaks to me very quietly now, you know, because I have these ways, these practices and things that are about stillness and quietness and listening and all those things. And so it knows it's changed. It talks to me differently. But the things that it says to me are the things that I have to listen for, because I know that they're not love. That's not love. To say, you're not good. This doesn't matter. You don't matter. This doesn't matter. That's not love. But when you come from that being love, it takes extra effort and extra practice to understand, oh, that is not love, right? That is not a loving voice.
I know. And it's extremely tricky because I agree of exactly that. Like, you're primed to think that is love, actually, and to be like, that voice is trying to protect me from failure or whatever.
That's right.
You know, I have
that
same...
But it's protecting me from living.
Yeah.
You know.
I know. I have that same thing. And I feel like that voice is so quiet. Sometimes like for me, sometimes it's totally invisible and it'll just manifest in like procrastination and like then being ill prepared and making bad last minute decisions and then being like, yeah, that's correct. I suck. You know, it's like, but all of that conspired to make that moment happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Okay. I love this conversation. I have just a few last things to ask you.
Okay, great.
One is, if your shame was kind of embodied, concretized as like an animal, creature, figure, anything outside of yourself that you can imagine, what's the first thing that pops to your mind?
I mean, I don't want to, I love animals, so I don't want to do that to them. You know, I had this realization recently that like, I went to an exhibit and it was all about sharks, and like some sharks are like extinct because of our misunderstanding and fear of them.
Oh.
And same for like bats. Like, we humans are afraid of them, so we kill them, and like they're actually really sweet creatures. You know, like it's like all this stuff. So I'm like, I hesitate to use an animal for that. But it's really just like a oily void. You know what I mean? It's just like this oily sort of drenching slick of toxic sort of with a kerosene smell, you know?
Yeah. I love the metaphors, like how the oil is like, it's hard to get it off of you. It's hard to clean up. A void will kind of suck you in, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the kerosene smell.
And it has this like iridescence to it that's like also sort of pretty,
seductive.
You know, and like seductive and confusing.
Seductive and confusing. Yeah.
And the kerosene smells is very strong.
Are you someone who doesn't like the smell of gasoline?
No, I like it.
You like it.
But it like, I like it. Yeah. Very like used it to it. It reminds me of my childhood. That's the thing.
Gasoline.
Yeah. Gasoline, kerosene, all those things. Cause my, my dad's side grandfather was a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like most of the summertime was just like listening to engines being like constantly cranked and turned, trying to turn them over and trying to get them to work, you know? So there's just like a lot of that smell, you know, just like loud fans and compressors going off and all that stuff.
It's so wild when you're hit with those smells and it just takes you back momentarily.
It really does. It really does.
My dad was always building shit. And so like the smell of like sawdust and some kind of like work chemicals. Like I don't even know what they are, but I'll get
there's
a whiff.
So many of them.
Yeah. And I'll be like, ah, like feel like I'm 8 years old in the grass.
Turpentine or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Was there anything that we talked about today that either you said, I said, or just kind of came up in the ether for you that made you have like a meta shame spiral in the moment or that you think might if you're debriefing later?
That's always a possibility, but I don't, in this moment, you know, I don't feel that way. I actually feel like a lot of this conversation has allowed me greater capacity on some of those things. Like when we were talking about when you asked me the two questions, like I was able to see how the way that I would feel about losing a friend and not being able to be there, and knowing that they know I am there for them, allowed me to sort of consider that within the baseball scenarios that I find myself in, that like it's already okay, you know. I've actually had a lot of opening in this conversation that I don't think is going to lead to shame spirals, which is nice. And I appreciate it very much.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad to hear that. Also, I'm like, I want your therapist. I feel like you're so like mentally well.
I mean, that's nice. That's a nice reflection because I haven't felt that way. So, yeah, I do somatic therapy.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, see. I used to practice. I went to grad school for drama therapy, which is very connected to somatic therapy.
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
Embodied therapies are cool. Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah.
I find them to be very helpful for anybody that's listening who's like got like trauma in the past. I don't actually, this is my personal opinion. So this is not professional, but my professional comedic opinion, but is that I don't actually think that talk therapy works for trauma. For people that have trauma, it could have work potentially eventually, but I spent decades talking about these things and nothing, it didn't change. Of course, there's other things in my life that I needed to change that I also think was like part of that, but I don't actually think just talking through things actually works because it's actually in your body. So like you can't
it's in your
talk
body.
Through things that are physically in your body. You know,
I hear that. I think that's often true, like especially with when you're doing talk therapy with someone who isn't like really well trained in trauma specifically and kind of knows how to like engage with you in that world. But also there's a way that embodied therapy is like, I know my experience of drama therapy being a patient, like you can run, but you can't hide. Like once your body's there and that.
Yep.
Has been really transformative for me too. So yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Shame Spiral. You can follow the pod at Pod Shame Spiral on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all the usual places. This episode was edited by myself and Sarah Gabrielli, and original music was by Shadwick Wild. please keep listening and rate and review if you're feeling generous. I have so many exciting guests lined up for our season. Thank you again for joining us, and spiral on, but not too much, okay?